Hey, what's up, everybody? This is... that was a weird word.
Get the motor going there.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Matt.
This is Wes.
We play in a band called...
Ra Ra Riot.
And you're listening to...
Sound Sessions.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions. It's great to see y'all here. We are with one of my favorite bands, and I was telling you before the interview that I think I've seen your name on more posters than any band, Ra Ra Riot. We have Wes Miles and Matthew Santos. What's going on, guys?
Hey, thanks for having us.
Hello, yeah, happy to be here.
It's great to see you. So we just heard, if you were watching and listening, one of your new songs, which Bad to Worse, which I've been spinning probably for the last week or so.
Awesome.
That. Oh my gosh, the vibe on it is so chill. It's such a great song. Where did the inspiration and this kind of vibe come from? With you got the new album coming out, Super Bloom.
Yeah.
So,
this song, Bad to Worse, kind of... Well, it came out of some of the same sessions that Ross Tim and I wrote Water, our single for our last record. And, but it was kind of a last minute thing we finished for this record. So it was like a long time stewing and percolating. But it was inspired by us kind of taking similar parallel, really long trips to New England. And, you know, we both... have like, you know, different reasons to go to the Cape, but you know, we were talking about these long trips and how it feels when you leave, and how it, you know, feels like a different place when you get there. Maybe like a, you know, you feel like you've changed or something on a long road trip, or you know, seeing the world in the side view mirrors and stuff like that. So it's a little bit about that. It's a little bit about you know, just growing up, I guess, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned working with Rostam, who is in the band Vampire Weekend, a pretty well-known guy in the music industry. What kind of advice or insight did he share when you were going through this writing process?
Well, yeah, he's been like a long-time collaborator of ours. We were just talking about yesterday, actually. And I'd forgot he's been involved in every one of our records, and like, you know, some part of it, even our first record, there's like a few tracks that he helped like arrange, or you know, had just songwriting advice for us, or you know, but for this record it was kind of like well, we wrote those two songs together, and yeah, I just think he's got a unique perspective. You know, it's hard to quantify, but he always knows how to get my like the best takes out of me. He knows how to like get you know, I think best takes out of all the band members, you know, everything that we're doing.
So what did he need to do to put you in that right kind of mindset? Because I know as a musician myself, it's kind of vulnerable to be put in that position where you're taking a piece of your artwork or a song that you just toiled over in your bedroom and bringing it to somebody and saying, hey, could you fix this? Because it's a very personal thing, writing and creating music. So what did he need to do to rattle that cage to get that kind of great performance out of you?
Well, it's not necessarily about comfort. You know, it's like it can be partly about just getting you out of your comfort zone. And, you know, being vulnerable can be a really good thing. I think a lot of the vocals on the songs that we do with him, those are like first or second takes.
Wow.
You know, like, and it's kind of, maybe it sounds strange to be like, oh, you just do one take and that's it. Like, aren't you going to try and beat it? But there's something special, I think, when you're trying to figure out what you're doing, and you know, you have the excitement of like, oh, I like this thing that we've written. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel coming out? And maybe that's a more vulnerable thing, and that works with the rest of the vibe, you know, kind of like a really warm, sonically song, and a, you know, like synthesizers, and you know, like he likes to tell Becca to play quietly, you know, just like really barely touching the strings. So it's just like, it's stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think would be like, you know, it's not like, hey, do it again, but calmer, you know, or more comfortable. You know, it's like stuff like that. So.
So we were talking a little bit before the interview, too, about preparation for singing. And we were talking about our favorite drinks that we have on tour and off tour. Matthew, your favorite drink, it sounded very interesting. I don't know if you want to put it on tape, but your favorite drink, the Negroni.
Negroni, yeah. It's classic, classic staple.
Yeah.
I love the Negroni any time of year, any time of day.
Okay.
You know, not so much in the morning, but...
Yeah, I mean, if it's a weekend, I mean, that's a whole different thing.
Yes.
When you guys, what town are you guys from, by the way? Where'd you get your whole start and everything?
Well, the band, we started in college at Syracuse University, so far upstate New York. Now, most of the band lives in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah, but... Yeah, we're from sort of scattered throughout the Northeast. Like, Wes is from New Jersey. I'm from Massachusetts originally, so.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I mean, I love that part of the country, and it's such just like a laid back, but kind of a you get one shot and that's it kind of vibe. I feel like that's it. You get one shot to be nice and that's it. I was told by that from a friend from Philadelphia one time.
He's like,
but I was wondering.
They didn't know about it being nice down there.
When you go back home or anything, are there any bars or any places you go to and they're just like, oh, look, it's Matthew, he's back, get him the Negroni?
No, sadly, we're not really regulars anywhere, right? There's like bars that we like going to in Brooklyn a lot, but yeah, we don't go to them often enough.
Yeah, a few good ones have closed too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's like my favorite towny bar back in my hometown, which... It's too sacred to even speak its name.
Oh, wow. Anyways.
But it's like a fisherman's bar. So it opens up early because I grew up in this like coastal like seaport town. It's still a super active commercial fishing city. So yeah, this bar is basically for like, you know, the fishermen who get back from their like 4 weeks out and they just have like a ton of cash on them from their trip. So they come to the bar, you know, like the ship gets back at like 6 a.m. They go straight to the bar. So
yeah,
it's open at like all kinds of crazy hours. And
that's one of the toughest jobs in the world is being a commercial fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine what kind of stuff they drink. What, like turpentine?
Yeah, who knows? Some strange boat brews that they whip up out there. And yeah, a couple of my old friends too do work on the scallop boats.
Wow.
So I'll have to ask.
No, that's
what they do. It's mysterious to me. I have this like romantic idea. I'm like, one day, you know, I'm going to leave the music industry behind and go home and be a fisherman or something. But
would you actually consider doing that if everything went to hell with music?
I mean, it seems romantic, but I don't feel like I'd be welcomed by the community.
I don't think you're cut out for that work.
I mean, I'm cut out for traveling at weeks at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, the tour is massive. Before we dive into that, though, Wes, what's your go-to drink on the road and off tour?
Okay, well, we'll start with off tour. Probably, well, let's start on the road. That's easier because it's just water.
Room temperature.
Yeah, no ice. Water is my basically only drink.
Okay.
On tour, just to save my voice.
Now that's fair. So you don't go hot. You don't go ice.
Yeah, yeah. Because tea can can scald your cords if you're not careful.
Do you ever steam your voice before you get on?
Yes, I did that this morning actually for the TV session.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that I do occasionally, but yeah, it's, you know, it's like a lot of like dietary restrictions, like, you know, chocolate's bad, caffeine's bad, alcohol's bad, but
I do all of these things before I play, by the way. So this
and I'll do
good.
Them all at the end of the tour, but you know. But yeah, I think maybe I love a good Champs-Élysées, which is a drink I've only had a few times, and that's probably why it's still one of my favorites. I think it's with like green chartreuse and lime juice and I don't know, some other stuff. I'm not a bartender, but it's
don't ask me these hard questions.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a kind of a fancy. It's a drink for a fancy lad, which you know, when I get off tour, I feel like that or an Aperol Spritz, great summertime drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a. Yeah.
So what is?
To a Negroni.
Yeah, it is kind of closer to Negroni. It's like
the key is you have to mix the Aperol with Campari. You got to get an Aperol Campari spritz because that cuts a little bit.
All right. you had your favorite drink already. Let me.
Bud Light.
Yeah, that's his real favorite drink.
This is all just an elaborate ruse. It's like the Champs-Élysées. We see you guys on tour. It's just Bud Light sponsorships for the next. If you take off that heart, it's actually just a Bud Light hat the entire time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you guys are going on this massive tour with Third Eye Blind and Jimmy Eat World. I mean, two of the biggest bands in all of the 90s. The songs still stick with us today. I read an interesting quote, and we're going to take it back a little 90s because you guys kind of bring a little youth to this tour, which is good. But there's something about 90s music that kind of lasted the test of time. I think that Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray was quoted by saying, the 1980s, the music seemed good until Nirvana came around, and then everything from the 80s became a joke, but then everything post-Nirvana became, you know, just synonymous with just good music. And you listen back to some of the 90s albums that you hear today, even Britney Spears, and all these songs are still lasting the test of time. You put them on, and people can get down to them and really enjoy them, but nobody's going to be like, you know what, Right Said Fred, that's my go-to band. I didn't get the tattoo for a reason, you know. What is it about, like, 90s music that kind of sticks around? Because I can see a little bit of influence in your music as well.
Yeah, I don't know exactly why, but I mean, I think there's just always good music. I disagree with Mr. McGrath on the fact that
you're going to be the first.
Yeah, that 80s music is a joke, but I just think there's always good music, and probably people. Maybe it just takes time for people to realize, like, what really was the best version of, you know, a decade's, like, style or something. Mm-hmm. But we still listen to 80s and 90s music, like, you know, Janet Jackson and, you know, 90s era U2. And, and bands like Third Eye Blind and... Well, actually, I was really into Pavement. That was like my big...
Pavement?
Yeah, that was my big 90s band. I was like obsessed. I listened to all their records. And mm-hmm.
I feel like they made a small comeback a few years ago. Because I was speaking to another artist who was mentioning their love for Pavement too. Now you're playing with Third Eye Blind. You're playing with these great bands. Do you ever cover any of their songs before their sets?
Just to, like, no, that would be rather rude, I think. We've talked about doing that hypothetically for other, like, opening slots, but I remain opposed. I think if someone was opening for us and played one of our songs, I don't know. Maybe I would think it was cute or something. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it's hard.
Matt's a
well, yeah. I'm a proponent of this. Well, we were. The hypothetical conversation we mentioned was, I'm not a singer, was just last night we were talking about, like, you know, getting these great support slots, and we're like, what's next? What's, like, the dream support slot? And we're like, obviously, you know, opening for U2 is probably on the horizon for us. And so we've done a couple of U2 covers before. So we're like, in that case, could we play Two Hearts Beat as One or before the set? But, you know, we'd have to clear it with Paul and Dave and Adam and Larry first.
I literally thought you were going to say Bono and the Edge first. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I did.
I used
already cover names. So I was just showing off a little bit. But we'd run it by them. And if they were going to play it, then of course it would be a no-go. But I don't know. I think it could work in the right circumstances, but it's a dicey proposition for sure.
No, I dig that. I dig that. Do you guys ever think about the kind of a popular mindset that goes around today? It's putting things out into the universe and letting them happen. Like, do you ever think that if you just put out the fact that you wanted to open up for U2 one day, that it might happen now that you just dropped it on the Sound Sessions podcast?
Yeah, I am. I believe in that kind of actualization kind of thing. It's like...
You were telling a story about Jim Carrey yesterday.
Yeah, it's a big... big principle in my life. Yeah, Jim Carrey, how he wrote when he was like struggling and early in his career as like a stand-up or you know, whatever. He like wrote a check to himself for $1 million and just kept it in his pocket until it was cashable. I was like, that's cool. That's cool. He's on to something. But yeah, I think in my life, the best example of that happening was when I was doing an interview for a Dallas area publication, and I mentioned, they're like, what are you going to do on your day off in Dallas? I was like, I don't know, hopefully go to a Stars game because I love hockey. And then we all got like a luxury box, you know, they like hooked it up because the right person heard it. So yeah, so it works.
Yeah. Well, you know,
so if Bono, you're listening.
He loves this podcast. He writes into it nearly every week.
Yeah. It would be a great honor to share the road.
Well, you
too someday.
I mean, that's just awesome. So they would be your go-to band that you'd want to open up for, because you do have a few headlining dates too that you're taking on this tour. So, but you too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've already opened for some of our all-time favorite, most respected bands. Like we did a few tours with Death Cab for Cutie. Mm-hmm. We did the Postal Service. We did Shin's Run, and now, yeah, like opening for these bands. Like we were just saying, particularly Third Eye Blind for me, it was like one of my first favorite bands ever. Yeah. So I didn't really know what's left after this. Yeah,
headlining, headlining tours would be great.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Which we will be doing, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, you've been playing for such a long time. I mean, it's been years in the making with the band. What is like the next thing you want to do? I mean, put out the new album that's coming out, Super Bloom, when it blows up. Is the next goal to be headlining, or what's like that one moment when you're gonna look back and say, wow, you know, we made it. Like, this music thing is really working out for us, and this is a great thing. Or have you already had that moment?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, you have it on different levels, you know. I think there's always like a dangling carrot ahead of you, as like we've been saying. So there's been a lot of moments that we look back on now, like, you know, when we just put out the 10-year reissue of our first record, that was like, wow, we've been around for a while. And, you know, feel pretty lucky that we have been around this so long. But then, you know, especially touring with these bands now, they've been around for almost twice as long or maybe more. And so it's just like, well, we hope that we can be around for that much longer, you know, twice as long as we are now, and still feel as hungry and passionate and everything about what we're doing, and have a lot more music to make. Yeah, I think we still feel like we've got a lot more to accomplish. So
yeah,
you know, doing more headlining tours, and you know, we're going back to Europe in the late fall for the first time in like 8 years, which is really great to, you know, start reinvesting in that territory. So yeah, I think we want to be busier. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's just one like general goal, is to just be doing more stuff. And we're psyched that our record's coming out in August, you know, just after this tour. So we'll have time to let it percolate, and then, you know, we'll come back to hopefully many of these places and see who it stuck with. So
yeah, well, speaking about that, your fan base is just so dedicated and just so awesome, and from the shows that I've been to, you guys put on the most energetic, awesome show, and
Thank you
really vibe with your audiences. Do you have any moments in your touring career where somebody came up to you like and just said the thing, like the thing that stuck with you? I interviewed the band Rise Against, and the lead singer was talking to me about how a soldier gave him dog collars, and, you know, and how that just like touched him, his soul. Yeah. It doesn't have to be dog collars, but is there any kind of moment where, or like person, of personal fan experience that you're just thinking, wow, you know, it's, our music is touching this person in a way that I never thought or dreamed possible?
I can't think of a specific moment that was like, you know, more overwhelming than everything else. Yeah. But, for me, like, you know, we're trying to be more active on like all our socials and stuff. And occasionally we get emails from, you know, people throughout the world, like really places we've never been before. And they're just like, oh my God, when are you going to come here? We need to have you here. Like, you know, there's so many fans here. And we want to get to all those places for sure. But also I think like, you know, playing this tour when people message us and they're like, I had never heard of you before, but I just took a risk and showed up early because, you know, we play at like 7 o'clock, mm-hmm. you know, on this tour, which is, it is early for some people during the week. And they're like, I never heard of it, but, you know, you have a new fan and me and, you know, my friends who came or whatever. That feels awesome because it's like, you know, it's a, playing first of three for like big amphitheaters. Mm-hmm. It can be a tough gig because it's not full yet. It's still daylight, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not sure how many fans there are. You know, there's always a few that came out and they knew us. But just seeing that people are like, you know, actually paying attention and yeah. like willing to invest their time in us in you know, never having heard of us before too. So that's cool. And yeah, just like talking to people after shows and stuff is just... It never gets old, mm-hmm. really, mm-hmm. you know.
So what about you, Matthew?
Well, one specific memory I have that doesn't deal with a specific fan, but it was like a moment at one of our early shows, because like we just started, you know, we basically formed as like a college band, so we were playing like, you know, lots of shows around campus, but then we started venturing out, trying to book our own tours. And those early shows, we would always rely on like, you know, whose cousins are coming tonight? Who has like an old high school friend who can bring like some people? And so, you know, every night.
I know that life.
Yeah, yeah. So every night, you know, you'd try to fill up the room a little bit. But there was like one night when there was like some people at one of our shows and they were like singing along with some of the songs. And, you know, afterwards we were like, whose like family was that? Whose cousin was that? And we like, I was like, I don't know him. And we were like, so you're telling me these like strangers came to see us and they like knew the song, and, you know, and I remember being like, oh, this is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And that's when it first started seeming like, you know, like maybe, you know, we could do this more, play for more people who don't know us. Maybe this is like a could actually turn into something. So that was kind of exciting early on when, yeah, it wasn't just like, yeah, high school friends or something.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That must be such an exhilarating experience. Like the words that you came up with in your head in your bedroom are now sung by somebody, and it means something to them too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very exhilarating, very confusing too, but yeah, very exciting.
Do you remember the first venue that you played where like the line was out the door for you guys?
No, not specifically.
I remember the first time we sold out Bowery Ballroom in New
wow.
York. And that was like, I think we sold out ahead of time. So yeah. There wasn't exactly a line out the door because it was already sold out, which was cool. But that was a really fun, special show because we had one record. We only played like, well, there are the 10 songs on the record. Then there are 2 songs on our EP that weren't on the record. And then there was like one more cover. So we played all those songs, including, you know, 2 of them or whatever were in an encore. And then we left again, you know, intending that to be the end of the show. But it was only, you know, maybe it was only like an hour or something. But, you know, for a band with the first record, it seems like, you know, that's all that we could give them. And I think they knew that, but they wanted something else. So they just kind of like basically demanded that we come back down and play one more song. So we had to play a song we had already played before.
Wow.
And, awesome. Yeah, which is such a great feeling. And I was like, we have no more songs, and they just didn't care. You know, they just wanted more. Yeah.
Didn't we do like a raise your hand? We did like a crowd yeah. vote.
We voted on, it was Dying is Fine or Ghosts Under Rocks.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's what won. So
2 red songs.
It. Yeah. Yeah. So we played that one a second time, and, yeah, it was that's like something I'll never forget. Yeah, that was really cool.
Man, that must be the ultimate, yeah. guys.
It was pretty cool.
So you're here in Chicago. As you can see, you're out looking Navy Pier. You're here in this great city
yeah.
in the WGN radio studios. What kind of stuff do you do while you're not on stage? Are you going to hit the town? Do you have a favorite pizza spot here in the city?
Yeah, I mean, we love Chicago. You know, we've been coming here now for you know, 12 years passing through town. So we've gotten to know it pretty well. We had the day off here yesterday, which was nice. Didn't make it to the Cubs game, which still has eluded us, but one of these days. But yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of things here. We've taken the boat rides through the canals out into the lake. We yesterday we went to Longman and Eagle, one of our favorite restaurants in town.
Yeah, nice.
There's so many great bookstores in Chicago here. We went to Myopic Books. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, and another one I always love is, I think, Clark Street or North Clark Street Books, another one of my favorite bookshops here. Yeah, so we've done all kinds of fun stuff. I don't know if we're going to have time to do anything else today, but it was nice to have the day here yesterday. We always trying to get a day off in, you know, cities we like. So, yeah, like I said, hopefully if we're back in the fall or winter, we can make it to a Hawks game too, because that'd be fun.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because the WGN is the home of the Hawks and the White Sox. Not the Cubs.
It?
We were the home of the Cubs for 90 years.
Oh,
we
wow.
gave it up a few years ago, right before they won the World Series. Bad timing on our part, but it happens. So if you ever want to come back, let me know beforehand, and we can try to hook something up.
Oh,
and if my bosses are watching this, I'll go through you first. Trust me. guys, thanks again for joining us. This is awesome. Before I let you go, I'd like to do a quick lightning round of questions, if you wouldn't mind. This was invented by our producer, Ryan Pollock, who had this amazing idea of doing a little play on your name. Of the newest, hottest show, Rah Rah Right or Rah Rah Wrong?
Okay.
I'm going to give you guys some certain things, and I want you to let me know if you think that it's Rah Rah Right or Rah Rah Wrong. First, I'll give you an easy one. Okay. Socks with sandals.
I'm not trying to be like cool or weird, but I think that's Rah Rah Right by me. If that's how you want to dress and be comfortable, go for it.
All right. Do you want to give your opinion on it?
No, we can go.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Pineapple on pizza.
I'm going to say that's rah rah wrong. That's a easy one for me.
I've come around to it in recent years, but I'm fine considering that wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Men in Speedos on the beach.
Well, this guy's guilty of that himself, so that's... That's very rah-rah, right.
Uh-huh. But yeah, absolutely. I am one of those guys.
Wow. I would not have expected that.
Try
Leopard
it out
print?
Sometime. Try it. Yeah, it's great.
All right. How about...
Clinging trunks, all that stuff. It's just...
This nice you let it free?
Yeah.
Man. All right. We'll catch a glimpse of that on tour. Maybe that could be like a new merch item. Just like a, you know, just like a banana hammock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not a bad idea.
Okay, how about adults with cotton candy? Adults with cotton candy.
I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say rah rah right. I'm all rah rah right with that.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I thought you were going to say rah rah fine.
I'm rah rah fine with that.
It's been a while since I've had cotton candy myself. I think we're all more concerned about our dental health in the past few years.
Than fluffy
I
sugar?
Think the best case would be if it was with a man with a huge beard.
Oh!
That's probably the best case.
Yes, yes. Like the big motorcycle guys, the guy from Tool Time back in the day.
Yeah, if that guy had a Al.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
If Al had a cotton candy... His was like kind of like trimmed though and like sculpted. Like I'm talking like a wild like
Duck Dynasty.
Oh.
Yeah, like
Duck
Dynasty. Duck Dynasty beard.
Duck Dynasty.
Like, yeah.
Okay, I feel you on that. All right, so we got two more here. Longshore fisherman. Give this one to Matthew.
Longshore fisherman. So what actually constitutes a longshoreman?
You know, these are questions that are left for the audience that I don't really know the answers
I'm
to.
I'm more of a scalloper kind of guy myself. I'm in with the scallopers that run out of New Bedford. But, I support all, we're kind of mostly vegetarian vegans, mm-hmm. but I also, you know, support the fishing industries as they're underappreciated and, it's a very tough job. You know, you eat your sushi, it's easy to forget where that all came from. So all the fishermen out there and all the fisheries, you know, that's Robert Wright.
That was the best answer yet. All right. With that great explanation, I'll just give you an easy one here. Mullets. The mullet in 2019.
I mean, look, if you want to have a mullet, I'm not going to hold that against you.
Okay.
That's rah, rah, rah. That's all rah, rah, right with me.
Socks and sandals, mullets, cotton candy, it's all good.
I love it, guys. I love it. All right, last question. There's a lot of bands and people out there, people out there, young kids who are sitting in their mom or dad's basement or they're in their bedrooms and playing their guitars or pianos or ukuleles, and they're thinking, you know, I'd love to get to the level you guys are at one day. What kind of advice would you give those kids who are sitting in their houses today?
Just learn your favorite songs. Just keep learning your favorite songs and... keep playing. That's basically it. However you want to do it, you know, I think we all took different paths to get here. Some like very, very trained and, you know, like Rebecca playing a classical instrument was like, you know, that's a thing you have to take really seriously in a lot of different ways. Not that the others of us haven't taken it seriously, but you kind of need some formal mm-hmm. training at some level. And Matt is on the other end of the spectrum. He's 100% self-taught.
Wow.
Which is really cool because, you know, we're in a band with both of these types of people and the rest of us are sort of like in between, I think, in different like, levels. But, yeah, I would say the best advice is just play. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing it by yourself, and there's nothing wrong with taking lessons too. You know, I used to dread taking like saxophone lessons when I was little and piano lessons, but I learned a lot from that. And I think getting friends that, you know, playing with friends, playing with people that maybe share some interests but don't share all the same interests, that's really helpful too. So I think you gotta spend your 10,000 hours quickly with your instrument before you get too old. So
oh yeah, I'll second a couple of things that Wes said. Definitely, yeah, learning your favorite songs is like a huge way to like, you know, get into other people's heads musically and, you know, learn like, oh, why do I like this bass line? Why is this arrangement appealing to me? And then you learn it from like the inside out. You like get in the song. That's super helpful. And yeah, like you said, playing with friends too, I think an important thing. And, you know, for me too, this was part of it. Always like pushing yourself a little bit, being like more of like an outsider musician. I was like really, I guess like intimidated in a way when I first started playing with people, you know, and playing with people who were like skilled songwriters and skilled instrumentalists already, but it made me improve like, you know, way faster than I would have. So yeah, don't be afraid to like, you know, play with people who are better than you. There's always, you can always learn stuff. And, that's the best way, just that immersion kind of thing. I think this is true for all things. Mm-hmm. And then the other big thing is like, don't ever be discouraged too, because, you know, to us, we're still like a small struggling band too. And we've been doing this for like 13 years. So it's like anything, you got to put the time in. And, you know, for every fun, you know, tour we get to do with like one of our favorite bands, which, you know, we're like pinching ourselves every day. You know, there were years of sleeping in the van and, you know, missing your family's birthdays and weddings and stuff, and, you know, all that kind of sacrifice that goes into it. But, you know, nothing, you know, like they say, nothing comes easy. And you just gotta, you know, don't be discouraged if you're playing for like three people at a show. Don't be discouraged if you're getting booed at an open mic. You know, just keep doing it. And every band, even the Beatles, you know, went through that phase too, living in the van, mm-hmm. playing to apathetic crowds. So yeah, you just gotta keep doing it. Never stop.
Never stop. Keep doing it. Guys, Matthew, Wes, it was a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey there, this is host Mike Heidemann. Thanks so much for listening to Sound Sessions. You can always subscribe to us on anywhere you get your podcasts. We're talking Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and of course, WGNRadio.com. I'm very happy that you stuck around to the end of the interview because we were so, so lucky to get an acoustic performance of their new hit single, Bad to Worse. So thanks again to Wes and Matthew, two of the most chill, laid-back guys that I've spoken to in a while. Really, really passionate about their music. And here they are playing the new song, Bad to Worse.
This is Ra Ra Riot. The song is called Bad to Worse. So support, radio loud, 84. Got the crew back together. Feels like it's been forever. But after a dream, they left the bar. What you expect? They know how we are. Cause I know it goes bad to us. You said it first. It's hopeless. We can't be. That cause we both know we ain't got self-control, and I'll always come when you bang on my door. To see it back on the floor, cause I know it goes bad to worse. You said it first, it's hopeless. We can't lift that curse, cause we both know we ain't got self control, and I'll always come when you bang on my door.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter at SoundSeshPod, and check us out on Instagram at SoundSessionsWGN.